Okay, we're going to begin here on the bottom of Zayin Amud Bet. Gemara says, Tan Rabbanan, En bodkim lo do'or hachama, velo do'or alevana, velo do'or avuka, elo or aner. To do bedika properly, one should not use sunlight, moonlight, a torch, but rather one should use a candle. Bipnei she'or aner yafe lebedika, because a candle is the best light to use when one is checking for chametz, doing bedika. Ve'avu pi she'en ra'ya ledavar, even though this is not a definitive proof, Zeich HaLedavar, it is an Asmachta. Again, this is what we quoted yesterday twice at the end of the Gemara yesterday. The reason it's being an Asmachta is it's not min HaTorah, it's min HaNeviim, min HaKtuvim. So it's an Asmachta Ba'amo, but an indication that Chippus, searching for Chametz, should be done al Yedei Aner. Shenemar, Shivat Yamim, Seor lo Yimatzei Bevatechem, Ve'omer. And then it says also, Ba Yosef, Vayichapes, Begadol Eichel. And over there, it also talks about Vayimatze, that he finds the Gvia Bamtachat Binyamin. And so there, Matzah, Metziah, Metziah, between what we find by Pesach and by Yosef. And then in that same pasuk, it talks about Chippus Ve'omer. And it says in Tzfania, Beitahi, Chapes et Yerushalayim B'Neirot, I will search Yerushalayim with candles. Ve'omer, and the secondary proof, which we discussed yesterday, why we need both of them, Ner Hashem, Nishmat Adam, Choveis Kol Chadrei Boten. So we see the association of a candle with searching, that the candle is the proper way to search, or is the proper methodology for one to search. Right. So first of all, it's a Zeicher LeDavar, not a Raya Gemura. And the Gemara yesterday discussed the fact that we bring two psukim to show that there's an association between Ner and Chippus. Each one of the psukim has a deficit. So the deficit of the pasuk of the Gemara talked about that might be a kula and not a chumra, and then the deficit in this pasuk, which was asked at the end of yesterday's shir, is what you're mentioning. Either the is there really a direct connection between the two? Is there really a connection between the chippus here and the ner? So there is a deficit in both psukim. We bring two psukim to show the same thing for that reason, which is that each one of them has a deficit, but the common denominator between them is both of them involve chippus and they wrote. Now the Gemara wants to understand the items that we dismiss. Hai ora chama hechi dami. When can you not use sunlight to do a bdika? Inema b'chatzer, if we're talking about in a courtyard, hamarovo chatzer ein atzricha bdika. An open courtyard does not need a bdika. Mipnei she'orvim mitzuyim sham. Because the ravens come and they clean it out. Something that is exposed to nature, exposed to the animals. And therefore, birds, ravens will come and eat whatever chametz that is left out there. So one does not have to worry about the possibility of there being chametz in the chatzer, since it's exposed to the elements and the animals, and it won't be there. So that can't be where you would have a havamina to use sunlight. Right, but the best time to do bedika might be the night of the 14th, as we saw before, because of two reasons. One reason being that people are found in their houses, and number two is because it's good for the candlelight. But if one does not do a bdika then they do it the next morning. If one does not do a bdika then because they're leaving early, they might do it during the daytime. So nighttime might be the optimal time period to do it because of ner, because of the candle. But in other situations, it might be that candle is not necessarily the best way to do it. Or the Gemara says that you have a possibility of doing it with chama. Why would he even have a possibility of doing it with chama in these other situations? All right, Elo Bach's Adra. We're talking about a gazebo. Maybe in that instance where it's not exposed to the elements, it has a cover over it, the walls are open, so the animals won't necessarily get to it, but there is ample sunlight there. Vamarova, Aksadra, Lora Nivdekit. Ain Hochanami. When you're talking about a gazebo, you can use sunlight. Sunlight is appropriate there. You can check it based on its natural sunlight. Where it says, Lo, Tzricha, La Ruba Dubicheder. Talking about a case where you have a sunlight that is in a room. You have some sort of opening or light, skylight that opens up, exposes a part of the room to the sunlight. Udeheche, where in the room are you speaking about? If it's opposite the sunlight, that's no different than the gazebo, where the sunlight would be appropriate to use because it's direct sunlight, it's perfect lighting, and you should be able to use it or utilize that for the bdika. So orachama would be sufficient by the aksadra, would work on the aruba, keneged the sunlight. Ela, the tzadim, must be the areas that are not directly opposite the sunlight, but away from it. So there, you can't utilize sunlight. So there, where it's not within the direct sunlight, it benefits from the fact that there's light in the room, but it's not in the direct sunlight, there sunlight will not suffice, and one needs to use a ner or a candle in that instance. So that's where the Gemara says you would have had a havamina to use, or a chama. And the Gemara says, no, you should use a ner. Now the Gemara moves on to another one of the rejections, which is vavukalo. You can't use a torch. V'amarova, my dichtiv, what is meant by the pasuk in Chavakuk? V'noga ko'or tiyeh, karnayim yadolo, v'sham chavyon uzo. So noga is the brightness, is like the light. Tiyeh karnayim yadolo, the rays that extend from him. V'sham chavyon uzo, and that's the hiding place of his strength. So now the karnayim we're utilizing here is karnayim as being rays. We're going to see that the Gemara, or the way it's interpreted by the Rishonim, the karnayim here, they use the term karan, like by Moshe Rabbeinu, karan or panav, which is the radiate, that his face radiated. So that's lema tzadikim domim mipnei hashchina. What are the tzadikim like in the face of the shchina? Kener bifnei avuka, like a candle in front of a torch. So the description of here is noga koertiyeh karnayim yadolo, that the brightness of the tzaddikim, which will be as bright as that of the light of Ma'aseh Breshit, nevertheless, in that context, it would still be karnayim yadolo. They will still only be of that radiance, or of that shining of the tzaddikim, it will be less than that of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It will be diminished. But that means that the ner, the candle, is considered to be much less than the avuka. Avuka is considered to be the brightest light. The ner is just a diminished light. And the tzaddikim is like a candle held up to an avuka. Handle held up to an avuka is like, again, carrying around a candle in the middle of the day. It doesn't have a lot of significance in the face of the avuka. So that's also important, just theologically. Kodesh Baruch Hu is the bright light, and each tzaddik is like a candle, which is that Hashem can manifest himself in many different ways. And then each tzaddik, each individual, has their own way of showing that manifestation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that they're all like candles in front of the avuka. When there's such a bright light, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides that light, each of the candles is a proper and correct way to be Ovid Hashem and to interact with Hashem. But again, in the context of Hashem, they're all batel, meaning that they're all ways and connections to Hashem. And that's why you can have a concept of Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chaim, that you can have diverse opinions and diverse ways within Avodat Hashem, and yet they all be consistent within HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem is such a bright light that he can incorporate all of these different ways, all of these different approaches to Avodat Hashem, and yet they will not be necessarily inconsistent or incongruent. And so that's why it's important for us to acknowledge that there are different ways to be Ovid Hashem, and there are different approaches to Hashem, and that's why this is a very important theological concept. But what we see from this is that a ner pales in comparison to an avuka, to a torch. V'amarovo, avuka l'avdala mitzvah min ha-mufchar. To use a torch for avdala, that's the best thing. That's the best way we do it, and that's our practice that we use in avdala, multiple wicks, in order that we do have an avuka of sorts. We have a lot of light. So why would you opt for a ner, a candle, as opposed to an avuka? Avuka gives off much more light, as we see in both of these instances. So why would you prefer the candle over the avuka? So we're going to have a number of answers by the Amoraim. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak, Zeh yachod achniso d'chorin u'distakin. When it comes to a candle, you can bring it into small areas. You can bring it into the holes and into the cracks. V'zeh yachod achniso d'chorin u'distakin. The torch, you can't enter into those smaller areas. It's just not plausible to bring a torch into those smaller areas. Rav Zvid Amar, Zeh oro l'fanav, v'zeh oro l'achorav. A candle casts its light forward. So if you hold up a candle, you can look past the candle and see what's there. Or avuka, when it comes to a torch, it casts its light backwards. Because if you look towards the torch, the light of the torch is so bright, it doesn't allow you to see beyond the torch. It doesn't allow you to search beyond it. It casts light around it, so you can look behind it, but you can't look towards the light of the torch. Papa Amar, ha-bayit, va-lo-bayit. One of them, the avuka, generates fear. Ha-lo-bayit, the candle does not generate fear. The fear being that you're going to torch the house. That when you carry around a torch in the house, right, there's the possibility that it'll catch fire in any place or location. So you're going to be conservative in your utilization of the avuka because of your fear of torching the house. Whereas the ner, the candle, is much smaller. It's a controlled type of flame. And you'll be much more liberal in its usage because you're not afraid of the house catching fire. Ravina Amar, hai mashach nehora, v'hai miktach iktufe. The candle has a steady flame, whereas the avuka, the torch, has a flame that jumps around or moves around. So again, in terms of efficiency and light, the candle is much more efficient because it has a steady light, a steady flame, versus the torch where it's jumping around and therefore does not provide a steady or easy a light to work with. So for all of these reasons, we give precedence to the candle over the torch because the candle has all of these benefits in terms of searching. And so everything here that's mentioned by the Gemara, I mentioned this already, I think twice already since we've been learning, but all of these benefits that are mentioned here by the Amoraim are certainly effective and meaningful with regards to a flashlight. Flashlight beats a candle for all of these reasons, which is that you can bring it into Chorim Tzedakim, no problem. You can zero relo fanav, the light is in front of it, it casts in front of it. It's a steady flame, it's a steady light, and there's no fear of the house burning down, catching the bed, the mattresses, the couch on fire. And therefore, a flashlight would be a very, very good alternative to using a ner. If you want to use a ner, you can make the bracha, use the ner a little bit, and then also use the flashlight when you get into smaller areas. But it's clear that a flashlight would be much more efficient and effective in doing bedikah, and most likely is probably a good way to do, or the proper way to do a bedikah. All right, now we're back to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah said, Kol makom she'machnisim bo chametz, that any place that one does not bring chametz into. Kol makom, this is standard fare for the Bavli. The Bavli says anytime you make a statement of principle like kol, it's not just a statement of principle, it must be coming to include something else. Because you said kol, you said everything. So what's that everything that you're coming to include? Kol makom latuye mai, what does that come to include? Latuye had tanu rabanan, comes to include this brayta. Chorei bayit ha'elyonim v'atachtonim, holes that are high up on the wall, low down on the wall, whose utilization is not easy, it's not accessible. V'gag ha'yitziah, the roof of the extension of the house. The gag ha'yitziah, Rashi assumes, is to be slanted and not flat like their other roofs, so it does not have easy utility. V'gag ha'migdal, this is the roof of a cabinet within the house, some sort of cabinet, again, the assumption being either it's too high or that it's slanted. Verefet bakar, and the cowshed, vilulim, and the chicken coop, umatbein, and the storehouse for straw, v'otzrot yayin, v'otzrot shemen, storehouses for wine, for oil, ein tzrichim b'dika. None of these require b'dika. So now, in terms of the breakdown of the breita, the chorei b'ayit ha'yonim v'tachtonim, v'gaga yitziah v'gaga migdal, all of those, the reason you don't need bedikah is because they're not areas that you would normally utilize because they're not easily accessible or easily usable. So that's why they're excluded from bedikah because we assume that you wouldn't use or utilize those areas. The latter items mentioned in the Braita, the refet bakar velulim, there we don't worry about it because we assume the animals have eaten it. That's in the refet bakar and the lulim. The matbein and the otrot yayin and the otrot shemen, over there, we assume that there's no chametz because those aren't areas that you bring chametz into. What's the chametz doing there? These aren't things that are utilized with chametz, or chametz is not utilized in those areas, so why would you expect to find chametz in those areas? Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, mita choleket v'toch habayit, if you have a bed that separates in the house, umafseket tzricha b'dika, it needs to be checked. So here, we'll see the Tosafot has numerous girsaot in our Gemara, but we'll go with Rashi for right now. Mita mafseket, there's a bed that sits, that divides the room. It's a piece of furniture, basically, that divides the room in half. Maybe, for instance, you have that with couches or with certain pieces of furniture that you could stick between a living room and a dining room, and they would divide up the room. So if you have such a division, such a piece of furniture that divides up the room, you need to check that item because there is utilized to store things. Either people will climb over it, climb under it, store things under it, and therefore one should do a bdika in that area. Viriminhu, is that really the case? Chor sheben adam lechaveiro, if you have a hole between a person and his friend, meaning between two houses, ze bodek an makom sheyado magat, this person checks until the point that his arm reaches, ve bodek an makom sheyado magat, and the other one checks until the point that his arm reaches. Vashar mevatlo belibo, and the remainder, you are mevatel, where you can't reach anymore, you're mevatel. The assumption would be that the only reason that you would have something that deep is because you have a very thick wall. So the assumption is that you only have that type of thickness of a wall between two houses because it would be the equivalent of two walls being put up against each other. So then you'd have a place where you're in Yadol Magat. In a normal wall, you wouldn't have that situation of Yadol Magat. So I'm assuming the reason that these cases are set up between homes is because then you have a depth of the wall where you could say that Yadol Magat and Yadom Agat, then there's still space in between them. So that's why I assume the Gemara is speaking in these terms. Shimon Gamliel Omer, Mita Choleket B'toch HaBayit, Veitzim V'Avanim Sturim Tachteha. If you have this piece of furniture, a bed that separates between the rooms, and it happens to have wood or stones underneath it, Afseket Enet Tzricha B'dika. And since it separates, it doesn't need B'dika. So again, Kasha Mita Amita, Kasha Chorin Achorin. This latter Braita presents a problem for the previous Braita. In the previous Braita, we said Chorim, you don't have to check. Then we have the second Braita saying that Chorim, you do have to check. The first Braita says when it comes to a mita, a bed, or a piece of furniture that sits between rooms, you do have to do a b'dika. And the second Braita says you do not have to do a b'dika. Gemara says, Chorin, Achorin, lo kasha, the holes, it's not a kasha. Habilai v'tatai. The first Braita was clear. It says that these are Chorim, bayit ha'elyonim, v'tachtonim. These are holes that are found high up and low down where they're not easily utilized. And that for that reason, you don't require bidika because we assume you did not utilize them. The second braita that says you have to check the holes, those are mid-level holes. Holes that are easily accessible, things that we would expect you to use, and that's why you have to check them. Mita mita lo kasho. The beds also are not a kasho between the two braitot. Ha de midlai, ha de mitetai. Depends how high it is off the ground. If it's very high off the ground, where there's ample space below it to utilize for storage and for placing things there, or for crawling under it, or for going over it, then you would have to check it. Hadamitatai is when it's very close to the ground, where there's not a lot of space between it and the ground, so therefore it wasn't utilized. Either you didn't crawl under it, or you didn't store things there. In that case, you would not require bdika. Right, that's the girsa that we have in our Gemara. That's the way Rashi explains it. Tosafot brings numerous different girsaot options about what the proper girsa is over here, including the Rabbeinu Chanana, which discusses the issue of etzim vavanim, the wood and the stones that are down below, that maybe they are the thing that makes the impact over here. The etzim vavanim fill the space in, and that's maybe why you don't have to check in these cases over here. Okay, otzerot yayin ein tzarich b'dika. Is it really true that the wine storehouses don't require b'dika? Vatanya. Don't we have a braita, otzrot yayin tzarich b'dika? Otzrot shemen ein tzarich b'dika. That the wine cellars do require b'dika. Otzrot shemen, the oil storehouses ein tzarich b'dika. So this is your question, David. What about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah seemed to indicate that the otzrot yayin do require b'dika. So halacha b'askinan b'mistapek. The difference is whether you take things out during the middle of the meal. If you go into the cellar to take out wine during the middle of the meal, then you require b'dika, because then we have the fear, as we mentioned in the Mishnah, that the Shamash had a piece of bread in his mouth and his hand. He went down there to get the wine, and he left the bread there. So that's why you need b'dika. So if it's mistapek, if you use it as a source of wine during the meal, then we have that fear that Chametz went down there. But if you're not mistapek from it, if you do not bring wine out from there during the meal, then there's no fear that's chametz in there. Then we don't assume that someone would have chametz, and there's no reason to believe there is chametz in there. Where it says, Yehochi Shem and Nami. Why don't we say the same thing with regards to oil? If that's true by yayin, why isn't it true by oil? So Shem and Yesh Keva Achila. When it comes to oil, you can estimate how much oil each individual will utilize during the meal, how much shemen each individual will need during the meal. And so once you've done that, you won't have to go in the middle of the meal to get more oil. Yayin and kevelishtia. When it comes to drinking doesn't have that fixed quantity to it. You could start drinking, and then you'll drink a lot more than you thought, and there are other times you drink less than you thought. So because of that, it's not a fixed amount. Even if you were to estimate ahead of time how much wine you need, you won't always be correct about that, and therefore there's a higher likelihood that you'll have to go get wine from the cellar during the meal, which is not necessarily true by the shemen. Tani Rabbi Chiya. Asu otzrot shechar bebavel, ko otzrot yayin beretz Yisrael, bimistapek. That in Bavel, where the major drink was not wine, but rather beer, so then beer takes on that same quality as wine. If wine was the mainstay of the meals in Eretz Yisrael, and therefore there's a high likelihood that someone might have to go and take wine out of the cellar during the meal, so too in Bavel, the same thing. If beer is the mainstay drink during the meal, then there's a high likelihood that someone might have to go into the beer cellar to get beer, and therefore you have the same din, which is if you take it out during the middle of the meal, or if someone goes in the middle of the meal to source the beer, then you would have to check it or do bedika in that case. Amar Rav Chista, Beidagim, Ein Tzarich Bedika. The door area for the fish does not require bedika. Vatanyo Tzrichin Bedika. We have a braita that says you do require bedika. Okasha, Habiravrave, Habizutre. It depends if they're big or they're small. So if they are big, you don't have to do bedika. Because again, they have a keva. They, as Rashi says, they're omed. You can estimate, you can understand, or you can try to predict what people are going to eat from that. And so therefore, we don't expect you to source from there during the middle of the meal. But zutre, in that case, is smaller ones. There, we're uncertain as to how much people will eat. And therefore, it's a possibility that you sourced from there during the middle of the meal. Amar Rabba Baravuna, Bay Milche, the salt store area, the salt cellar, Ube Kire, and the wax store area, or the candle store area, Tzarich Bdika. Both of those require Bdika, because those are areas that have a high likelihood of being used during the middle of the meal, that someone would have gone in there to get extra, to get more candles for the meal, to get more salt for the meal, and therefore, just like the Otsrot Yayin, they would require checking because of the possibility that someone went during the meal in there with bread in their hand, in their mouth, and that there is chametz in one of these areas. Amra Papa, Beit Zivei, the wood house, meaning where you store the wood, Ubei Tamre, and where you store the dates, Tzarich Bedika. They also require Bedika for the same reason, which are, these are areas that have a high likelihood of being utilized during the middle of the meal, or being accessed during the middle of the meal, and therefore there's a good possibility that there's chametz in these areas, and that's why they require Bedika. Tana. We don't require the individual when he's checking to stick his hand into the hole to check because of the danger. My sakana, what danger is there here? You're afraid of being stung by a scorpion when you stick your hand in there. Then kimishtamesh, hechishtamesh. What was he doing when he used it? I mean, obviously he used the hole. If he used the hole, then he wasn't afraid of a scorpion when he used the hole. So then why should he be afraid of the scorpion when he goes to check what's inside the hole? So if you could use it and you're not afraid, then you should be able to check it and not be afraid. Lotzricha dinafal. The house collapsed or the wall collapsed. Inafal lama li bdika. If the house collapsed, then why do you need to do a bdika at all? Vatadan. We have a mishnah further on in the sechta. Chametz shenafla alav mapolet. If you have chametz upon which something collapses, harehu kimivuar. It's as if it's been eliminated. It's as if it's been destroyed, because you can't get to it. It's not accessible. Our answer is, hotam, she'en akelev yachud l'chapeis acharav. That's in a case, where is it considered to be mivu'ar? That's in a case where there's so much on top of it that even a dog would not search in here, because there's no way for him to access the chametz. There's no way for him to get to the chametz. In that case, it's considered to be mivu'ar. Hocho, in our case of here, she'akelev yachud l'chapeis acharav. The dog could find it, or he could get to it. And since it's accessible to him, we assume it's also accessible to a human being, or easily accessible, and that's not considered to be mivu'ar. It's not considered as if to be completely eliminated. And so in a case where we know there's chametz vadai, sakana is not a p'tur. So in the case where you have a mapolet on top of chametz, if it's not accessible to the dog, then you don't have to do anything because it's kimivu'ar. If it is accessible to the dog, you do have to check, and you do not have an exemption for sakana because we know there's vadai chametz over there. In our instance, where you're going to a hole and there's sakanat akrav, and there's only a safek as to whether there's chametz or not, then you have an exemption for the sakanat akrav. That's what happened here. You used the hole, but then the wall collapsed, the house collapsed, and now we're asking you should go in there and check it. They say you don't have to check it because the fear of the scorpions that hang out in these areas. And we don't know for certain that there's chametz in there. So the combination of the safek as to whether there's chametz there and the sakana involved in entering into that area, we will not require you to do a bdika in that case. V'ama Rav Elazar, why do you have any fear here? Shluchei mitzvah einan zilkin. We have a principle that Rav Elazar tells us that shluchei mitzvah, a person who's engaged in a mitzvah, does not get damaged, does not have to fear from this type of sakana. So why are we worried about an akrav? Let him do the mitzvah, and he should be guaranteed protection. Right? Dose mitzvah lo yodo davera. Someone who does a mitzvah doesn't know any bad or evil from it. You're afforded that protection. Amar Rav Ashi, shema tavodo machat. Maybe he lost a, whether it's a wick or a needle of some sort in this area. Vatli yune batra. And he's going to look for it. So he's not only looking for chametz, which is the mitzvah, he's also looking for some personal effects, personal items that he lost. So while he's at it, he's going to find things that he was looking for as well. Yeah, but I think it's written in the future in the sense that in a case, not that in this particular case, but in cases in general, Shema Toved Lo Machat, he will lose a needle and then he'll come to do B'dikah. I don't think it means in the future as in this particular case. So Gemara says, Uchigai Gavna Lav Mitzvah? Is that not considered to be a mitzvah? Even though he deviates from the mitzvah, he branches off to do some personal business, that's still not considered to be part of the mitzvah. Vatanya, we have a braita. Ha'omer sella zulit tztaka, b'shvil sheyechia b'ni. I'm going to give this money to tztaka on the condition that my son should live, that he should be cured of this ailment. Oh, sheyeh ben olam haba, or that I should be zocha le'olam haba. Harei zeh tzadik gamur. That's a complete tzadik. Meaning that even with these ulterior motives, it doesn't considered, or it's not considered to be a problem in terms of the mitzvah. Now, of course, this Gemara is not so simple, as Tosfot raises the issue right away. We have in Pirkei Avot, we're going to read this Shabbat in the first parak of Pirkei Avot, which is, Al tiyuk avadim, amishamshim et rava, manat kabel pras. You should not be those that worship Hashem for their reward. We have an explicit Mishnah that says that that's an improper way to worship Hashem. So how could it be over here that you're worshiping Hashem and you're looking for personal benefit from the mitzvah? That's one of the basic tenets, at least according to the Mishnah Avot of Avodat Hashem, is that Avodat Hashem has to be done simply for the Avoda and simply for Hashem, not for the reward that you get for that mitzvah. So Tosafot over here reconciles between them and says that there's no problem for looking for personal benefit from a mitzvah, as long as you don't assume that that is the only outcome, or that is the assumed outcome of the situation. You say you give tzedakah on condition that someone will be cured, on condition that something will happen. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't mean that you regret the mitzvah. It doesn't mean that it undermines the mitzvah. So you're granted or entitled to make such a request in order to get that reward from the mitzvah, assuming that you don't make that the ikar, or the major portion of the mitzvah, that's the only reason you're doing the mitzvah, or it's the only way that you would consider the mitzvah to be effective. You hope that Hashem will respond, but if he doesn't respond, you also understand that it's basically a tefillah, that you're making a request of Hashem, and that request could be fulfilled or could be rejected. We find this a number of times in the Torah with regards to the difference between Bnei Yisrael and the other Amim, that with regards to tefillot to Hashem, when there are requests made of Hashem, that when it comes to Bnei Yisrael, the assumption is that Hashem could say yes or he could say no, and that Hashem might say no, and that would not undermine the faith of the Jew. Whereas by the other Amim, the Torah says that you must respond to their request, because if you don't respond to their request, they will then cast aspersions, have questions about Hashem. Find that by Tefillat Shlomo. By Tefillat Shlomo, when the establishment of the Mikdash, and he davens to Hashem, that Derech Mikdash Hazed, through this Mikdash, all the Tefillot will come to Hashem. And over there, he differentiates again between that response that Hashem has towards Klal Yisrael versus the response he would have to Amim Acherim. By Amim Acherim, the assumption being that Hashem will always respond or answer to them. But by Bnei Yisrael, that's not the case. The answer could be yes, could be no, but that should not undermine their faith. Rashi brings it as well by the brachot of Yitzchak to Yaakov and Esav, the difference between the brachot to Yaakov and the brachot to Esav, that the brachot of Yaakov is conditional, whereas the brachot to Esav is unconditional for the same reason, that a Jew wants something, makes the request, but understands that God could say no sometimes. And the fact that God says no doesn't undermine his faith, does not necessarily mean that Hashem is not listening or Hashem's not capable. Whereas by the other nations, we say that Hashem should respond to them, because otherwise they won't believe that Hashem has that capability or ability to do that. So that's one way to deal with this Gemara, the way Tosafot does, which is that the request for reward over here is not part and parcel of the mitzvah. It's not necessarily the only way to see the outcome of the mitzvah, but it's simply like that, a tefillah, a request, which one is allowed to make alongside the mitzvah, and that's how he reconciles with the Mishnah Avot. There are other Rishonim who suggest over here that the Mishnah Avot is the paradigm of the chassid, the one who does it perfectly right, is the one who does it not for reward. But that doesn't mean that someone does it for a reward is not Ovid Hashem, just not the optimal way to be Ovid Hashem. So this might be a tzaddik. He's not doing it the optimal way, but it's still a good way to do the mitzvah. If he's even more mature, if he's even bigger chassid, he would do it without the reward. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they are inconsistent or irreconcilable between the Mishnah Avot and here. The other way, or the last way to look at this, is that it has to do specifically with the mitzvah of tzedakah. The mitzvah of tzedakah is different than any other mitzvah. That's borne out by the Gemarot and other places, that by tzedakah, one is allowed to test Hashem. One gives tzedakah, one is allowed to make requests, and test Hashem with those requests with regards to tzedakah. That's brought down the halacha by the Torah, that by tzedakah, one can make these requests or make these tests of Hashem. The Beit Yosef, the Ramah on the spot over there, narrow that down and say that when the Gemara says it's only talking about Meiser, it's not talking about tzedakah in general, it's only talking about Meiser. And our Gemara over here would seem to indicate that it's a broader perspective here. Our Gemara asks the question in context of a mitzvah of Dika, not something that's unique to tzedakah. Gemara is willing to apply whatever din we have here with regards to tzedakah to a broader context, which would seem to indicate or be against that position that tzedakah is different. But that is another way to answer this problem between the Mishnah and Avot and what we have here, which is that tzedakah is more unique or has its own unique status, and therefore it's not broadly applicable, even though our Gemara here seems to want to apply it more broadly. The Gemara says, Dilma Batar de Badok. The answer is, you're right. If it's during the duration of his checking for chametz, he goes on a sidebar and he checks for something of a personal item, that would be fine because he'd be in the context of the mitzvah. The problem is, what happens if he completes the bedikah and then he does his personal search afterwards? In that case, he wouldn't be afforded the protection of the mitzvah. So then, and then he would be in trouble. You got the sakana wrong here. Until now, we've assumed the sakana here is being stung by a scorpion, that if you go into a hole, you don't know what's inside of there, and you could be hurt by whatever is hiding out or living in there. Now, Rav Nachman Yitzchok says the problem is not what's living in there, but rather your neighbor. Upalimo, and it's based on this statement of Palimo, Titanio. If you have a hole that's in a wall between a Jew and a non-Jew, you check until the place that your hand can reach, similar to what we saw in the previous brayta. And the remainder you do bitul. Palimo amar kol atzmo eno bodek. Don't check that hole at all. Mipnei sakana, because of the danger. My sakana, what's that danger? Inem sakanat kshafim. What are you worried about? That the neighbor is going to think that you're doing sorcery because you're in the hole over there? If that's the problem with sorcery, then when you use the hole, you should have the same problem. Why is bedika different than while you were utilizing the hole? It says, there, when you used the hole, you were doing it during the daytime when there was light there. So when you did that, there's no suspicion of kshafim. He doesn't think that you're performing sorcery on him because it's daytime. You're just using the hole that's there. Here you have other effects that make it seem like that you're doing sorcery, which is, it's nighttime, ushragahu, and you have a candle. So the combination of it being night and candle opens up this idea that maybe you're involved with kshafim, with sorcery. And then he starts to wonder what you're doing inside of this hole that's between the house with a candle between you, and therefore he's going to suspect you for kshafim. He's going to use that as an alila, as an excuse to, whatever, it's prosecute you, get you in trouble, so on and so forth. So in order to avoid that problem, we tell you don't check in the hole with the candle at all. So that's what the sakana is here. You're exempt from bedikah in this case because of that fear. The fear of what could happen in this situation when you have a hole between you and your non-Jewish neighbor. But that would also limit the cases in which you are exempted. In those cases that you're exempted completely because of this problem of kshafim. I ask the same question again. What are you worried about? Why are you worried about Nezik over here? Why are you worried about the neighbor when we say, Shluchei mitzvahin and zokin? If you're performing a mitzvah, you're under the protection of Hashem. When it says, Hecha d'shkiach hezeka shayni. In a case where it's something that's commonplace, then it's different. If it's something that could be expected or an expected type of outcome, then we do not apply the din of Shluchei mitzvah in a nizokin. When we say Shluchei mitzvah in a nizokin is when you undertake normal risk. If you undertake normal risks, in that situation, we assume that you will be protected from those normal risks because shluchei mitzvah enon zokim. You'll get the benefit of the doubt because you're performing a mitzvah. But in a case where this is not a normal risk because the risk is so high that this bad thing will happen, then you're no longer undertaking something that's a safek as to whether it'll be a risk or not. The assumption is that this risk will come about and that danger will happen to you. In that case, we don't say shluchei mitzvah enon zokim. There we don't say that as someone who's in performance of a mitzvah, is protected. So for instance, if one is driving to shul and they're late for a minyan, and they have to drive through a stop sign and a red light, we don't say shluchei mitzvah and nizukim, because you just drive through the lights and you drive to the stop signs because you're on your way to go to davening. You're late. You got to go. Shem will protect you. That's not. That's shchiach hezekah. That's a risk that's not normally undertaken. That's something where you're putting yourself in danger and an obvious danger. And therefore, we don't say shluchei mitzvah and nizukim. That person is misusing this principle, shluchei mitzvah and nizukim. When we say shluchei mitzvah and nizukim, it's a case where there's no more risk assumed. And how do we know this? Shenamar, it says by Shmuel. V'yomer Shmuel. After Hashem tells Shmuel to go anoint David, Shmuel says to Hashem, listen, I don't think I really want to do this because Shaul is going to get wind of it. And if Shaul gets wind of it, he's going to kill me. He's not going to let me anoint another king while he's the king. So how am I going to do this? V'yomer Shmuel, eich elech v'shama Shaul. How am I going to go and anoint David and Shaul get wind of it? V'hargeni, and then he'll kill me. V'yomer Hashem, eglat bakar tikach v'yadcha. Hashem comes up with a ploy for him to do something that looks like he is just in the normal course of action doing a korban, is bringing a korban on a mizbeach, and in that process he'll bump into David and he'll anoint him. So he gives him a way to do it without arousing the ire of Shaul. So you see that Hashem responds to Shmuel's request for protection in this case. Why don't we say shluchei mitzvah in azukin? Because over there, shkiach hezekah. It's a danger if he goes and he anoints a king while there's another king. That is a danger that is not just a normal undertaking of risk. That is a risk that is going to end up in death penalty or almost certain death. In that case, we don't say shluchei mitzvah in nezokin. So that's the proof that the Berurah brings, that there's a difference between shchiach hezekah versus a normal case where we say shluchei mitzvah in nezokin. By minei bnei Rav, they asked of Rav, hani bnei bei Rav, those talmidim that are part of the Beit Midrash of the Rav, bei Rav means that they are still dependent on the Rebbe. They're still learning by their Rebbe. The Dari Bebago, they live out in the Baga. We saw this in Erevin, that they live out in the fields, that they live in certain areas in the fields, and then they come into the city to learn in the Beit Midrash. Their residence, their dormitories are out in the fields, and then they're coming in to learn in the Beit Midrash. It's interesting, Rashi says over here that Baga says Napaya, which may be a canopy, that they lived under tents, or they lived in these temporary dwellings out in the fields, and then they would come in to learn in the city. Mahu. What's the din? The Meite Kadma V'chashocha the Beit Rav. That they come early to the Beit Midrash. They come before it's light out to the Beit Midrash. And they leave after it's dark. The obvious question being that there's danger. They're now going to be traveling when it's dark out from out in the fields to the city and the vice versa on the way back home. Is that permissible? I'm who? Nitu Alai Valtzavari. Says, come. He says, you can come early in the morning. You can be early to the Beit Midrash, and I'll take full responsibility. It's on me and on my neck. Meaning that I'm willing to accept the responsibility that if you come early, there will be no problem. Nezel mai. What about going back? Amalhu lo yadano. Says, I don't know. Says, on the way to the Beit Midrash, I don't have any question that you're afforded the protection because you're on the way to do the mitzvah. So on the way to the mitzvah, I don't have a question. But on the way back from the mitzvah, he says, I'm not sure if you're afforded that full protection. Itmar amar Rav Elazar shluchei mitzvah ene nizokin. Lo b'halichatam velo b'chaziratam. We have an explicit statement from Rav Elazar that when it comes to shluchei mitzvah, protection afforded to the shluchei mitzvah is not only when they're on their way to do the mitzvah, it's also on their way back from doing the mitzvah. Therefore, the protection in both directions. Right? It would make sense. Otherwise, that would kind of undermine the whole idea of the shluchei mitzvah being protected, because if you're only protected on the way there and not the way back, that might mitigate the fact that you're protected on the way there. A person might not go because they know that they're not going to be protected on the way back. So here, Rabbi Lazar says that there is a protection afforded to the shluchei mitzvah, both on their way to doing the mitzvah and on their return from the mitzvah. Come on. Who's that like? Yihai Tano. It's similar to this Tano, the Tanya. Isi ben Yehuda Omer. Klapei she'amar Torah. That which the Torah said. V'lo yachmod ish et artzecha. That no one will be jealous of your land. No one will covet your land. This is talking about when you go up to the regel. You'll be able to go up to the regel, leave your homes without any fear of the enemy attacking because you've left your homes to go up to the regel. So nobody will covet your land. No one will come or attack you in that place. Milamed. And so the Gemara learns this from Et Artzecha. Et is a ribuy to Artzecha is Shetei Paratcha Ru'eh Be'efer. Your para will be grazing out in the dust, out in the fields. Vein Chaya Mazikata. And no wild animal will come and damage it. Tarnogalotcha menekeret bashpa. Your chickens will be pecking in the garbage dumps. Ven chudama zikata. And the weasel or some sort of predator will not attack the chickens. Valo dvarim kalvachomer. Isn't it a kalvachomer for here? Ma elusha darkam lizok. These items, which are your possessions, they have a higher likelihood of being damaged. in a nizokin, and nevertheless, you're afforded the protection over here based on the pasuk. Bnei Adam, when you're talking about people themselves, she'ain darkam lizok, that their natural state is not to be in trouble or not to get damaged. Alechad kama v'kama. So then, certainly, you should be afforded that protection. As Rashi explains here, the difference between a para, a tarnagol, and a human being is that Adam itle mazla, ve'enu mahir liot nizok bigufo. That when it comes to monetary possessions that don't have mazel, there's more chance it's apt to happen that there'll be damage to these items. Whereas a human, which has mazal and has protection and is less likely to be damaged, that's how the Kal V'Chomer works. If Hashem's going to protect your possessions and your monetary items, then certainly he's going to afford that protection for you. So that here tells you that when you go up to the other regel, when you go up to the regel, you're going to be protected. In the Elabalicha, Bechazara Minayin. How do I know when you're returning from the other regel, you'll also be protected? Tamal Omar, Ufanita Baboker, Valachta Lo Alecha. Then in the morning, you'll leave and you'll go back to your tent. Melameid, Shetelech Vitimza Alecha B'Shalom. You'll go back home and find everything intact. I mean, Alecha B'Shalom means both your family that was there, as well as you yourself that return. Everything is going to be fine. The Gemara says, V'yachar dafilu b'chazara. Now, if we already know that when you return home, you're protected, B'halicha lamali. Why do you have to tell me on the way? It's a Kal V'Chomer again. If Hashem protects the person doing a mitzvah on the way back, then certainly he's protected on the way there. On the way to engage in the mitzvah, there's much more reason to believe that you're protected. So if the Torah already tells you you're protected on the way home, then why do you have to tell me that you're protected on the way there? So you might say, you're right. So then what do I use the pasuk for, the before that I quoted? Lo yachmod ish et artzecha. Look at the Rabbi Ami. Tam Rabbi Ami, ko adam sheish lo karka ole le regel. Someone who is a property owner, performs aliyah le regel, is chayav in the mitzvah of aliyah le regel. She'en lo karka, en ole le regel. Someone who's not a property owner is not obligated in aliyah le regel. If you remember back on Da'af Gimel Amud Bet, there Tosafot spoke about Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. Why was Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira not up doing the Korban of Pesach in Yerushalayim when he set his trap and he sent up that individual to ask from the tail, why was Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira not in Yerushalayim? So one of the reasons that Tosafot gives there is because he was not a landowner and therefore he was not chayav in Aliyah the Rego and he was not chayav in Korban Pesach. That's one of the reasons brought by Tosafot. But that's this Gemara here which says that Aliyah the Rego, the obligation of Aliyah the Rego, is only incumbent upon someone who is a landowner based on this pasuk, which is v'yachmod ish et artzecha, that when you go up to the regel, someone will not covet your land. That means that you must have land in order to go up to the regel, because otherwise this promise of v'yachmod ish et artzecha will be meaningless in that context. Amar Rabbi Avin, bar Arav Ado, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, mipnei ma ein peirot ginosar b'Yerushalayim. Why is it that these special sweet fruits are not found in Yerushalayim? They're actually found around the Kinneret. The Gemara talks about that area being known as Ginosar. It's a very fertile area. Today, still, they grow trees there and fruits there, which are of high quality. And so the Gemara wants to know, why don't we have those in Yerushalayim? Where it says, Kedei shelo ye ole regalim omrim. So the people come up to the regal will say, Il malei lo alinu elo lecho perot Ginosar b'Yerushalayim dayenu. Had we just come to Yerushalayim to have or partake of these fruits, it would have been enough. Nimtzeit aliyash lo lishma. Because that will cause people to come up to the regel for ulterior motives. They won't just come up to do aliyah the regel. They say, well, while we're there, we'll get all those good fruits. So we may as well go anyway, because while we're there, we can get the fruits. We don't want that possibility of people having ulterior motives for coming up aliyah the regel. We want them to come to aliyah the regel because they're coming to see Hashem and to be seen by Hashem. We don't want them coming for the benefit of shopping or purchasing fruits up in Yerushalayim. Kiyotzebo, it was a similar statement. I'm Rabbi Dustai, Rabbi Yanani, Pnei Ma in Chamei Tveria B'Yerushalayim. Why aren't the hot springs of Tveria found in Yerushalayim? Kedei shlo yu elei regalim omrim. For the same reason, so those people that are ole the regal shouldn't say, Il malei lo alinu alurchotz b'chamei Tveria. If we didn't come up to Yerushalayim just to bathe in those hot springs, dayenu would have been enough. Nimse taliyah shlo lishma. Turn out that the aliyah, the regal would be lo lishma. Again, the same idea. We don't want people coming up and saying, you know, while I'm at it, I may as well get into my hot tub, enjoy the fruits of Ginosar. So it's not bad going up Aliyah the Regel. Even if it's not great going up there for the Aliyah the Regel, at least I'll get these side benefits. So we don't want them having these side benefits because that will detract from the purpose or the main reason for Aliyah the Regel. And we want Aliyah the Regel to be Lishma. And because of that, Hashem did not place these special items in Yerushalayim, but rather in other places in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, now Gemara moves back to the Mishnah. And the Mishnah, it says, Ubame Amru, where do you need to do B'dikah? Bet Shirot al Pnei HaMartef. That's the two rows by the cellar. Marseif, Martef, Mandakar Shemay. How do we even get involved with a seller? How come the Mishnah all of a sudden talks about a seller? Where did that come up in the Mishnah? Marseif says, Hachi Kamar. This is how you have to read the Mishnah. Kol makom she'machnisim bo chametz in tzirich b'dika. The Mishnah says, any place that you don't bring chametz into doesn't require b'dika. Ve'otro di'ayin, ve'otro shemenami. The same is true by storehouses for wine, storehouses for the oil, ein tzirich b'dika. They don't require checking. Ubame amru, shtei shirot b'martef. And where do they say that you have to check the cellar, the wine cellar? Makom shemachnisim bo chametz umistapek, in a place where you bring chametz into and you source wine from there during the meal. So in that case, that's you need to check. And then the Mishnah continues and tells you what you need to check. And that's the shtei shirot opnei amartef. And that's what we say here. The next part of the Gemara is the machlok between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai omrim that you have to take shtei shirot opnei amartef. Amar of Yehuda machlok damoraim as to what Beit Shammai means. The two rows that you have to check, according to Beit Shammai, are from ceiling to floor, floor to ceiling. So according to Rav Yehuda, Beit Shammai requires you, when you walk into the wine cellar, to check the first two rows of barrels. The first two rows of barrels from the floor to the ceiling, first one, and then the one behind it. So two deep, you have to check in terms of the rows. Rav Yochanan Amar, Shirachat, Kamin Ge'em. You only have to check one row, but it's shaped like a game, whether that's a Greek gamma, the term is used throughout Shas to mean something that is on a right angle which it has two sides. So you have to check one row on the right angle. That means when you walk into the cellar, you have to check the first row that's facing you, as well as the row, the whole row that's facing the ceiling. So you'll create on a right angle, you'll check that first row. You'll check the row that is in front of you facing the door and the row that's on top that's facing the ceiling. So it's two rows, but it's not two rows that are adjacent to each other, but rather two rows that are perpendicular to each other. The row that's the face of the cellar and the row that is the top row that faces the ceiling. That's what Rabbi Yochanan says Beit Shammai meant. Tanya kavetet Rabbi Yehuda, Tanya kavetet Rabbi Yochanan. We have bright to support both of their positions. Tanya kavetet Rabbi Yehuda, Beit Shammai omrim shtei shirot al pnei kol amartev, two rows on the face of the whole cellar. Ushtei shirot shamru, those two rows that we're talking about, min haaretz v'shmei korah, from the ground until the ceiling. Tanya kavetet Rabbi Yochanan, shtei shirot al pnei kol amartev, chitzuna ro'et ha-petach, the outer row that faces the door, ve'yuna ro'et ha-korah, and the upper one that faces the ceiling, shlifnim emenu, that which is inside of it, ushlamata emenu, below it, ein tzirich b'dika. Lifnim emenu, inside of it, is talking about the one facing the door. So you have to check that first row, not the one behind it. And the one that is on the ceiling, it says, not lamata emenu. You have to check the top row, but not the one below it. But either case here, we have a braita that supports, one, the understanding of Rabbi Yehuda, that it's the first two rows when you walk into the cellar that face the door, from ceiling to floor. Floor to ceiling, and we have a bright that supports Rabbi Yochanan's understanding that it's two rows that are perpendicular, the row that faces the doorway and the row that faces the ceiling. Then we had Beit Hillel in the Mishnah. Beit Hillel omrim, shtei shirot chachitzonot, shehen elyonot. So two outer ones that are the upper ones. Again, machluk tamoraim as to what that means. Amarav, elyona, vishlahamata hamenu. What we know from Beit Hillel is that you have to check two rows of barrels, not like what we're talking about Beit Shammai, who says you check the entire face of the martef, or the entire ceiling of the martef. That's not what we're talking about here. They're talking about simply two rows of barrels. Those two rows of barrels, Rav says you check the uppermost row of barrels and the one below it. So when you walk into the cellar, the uppermost row that faces the doorway that's also facing the ceiling, you're required to check that one and the one below that. Shmuel Amar, Elyona Vishlifnim Hemenu. You have to check the upper one. Again, you start with the one that is facing the door, that's the top row of barrels. You check that top row of barrels that faces the ceiling, faces the door, and the one behind it. Not the one below it, but the row behind it that you have to check. So that's the machloket here between Rav and Shmuel. And that's what the Gemara says now. My taima, the Rav, what's the reasoning behind Rav? Dayak chitzonot. Say he's medayak from the Mishnah. It says the outer ones. Vail yonot kandani. What about el yonot? The mute tatai de tataita. To tell you that you don't have to check the third row of barrels. To come to el yonot means the upper two rows that are facing you, but you don't have to check anything below that. Shmuel amar el yonah shlifnim hemenu. Shmuel says that you check the top row of barrels and the one behind it. My daima daik el yonot. He said that the word says el yonot. V'hachitzonak tani. What about the fact that it says the outer one? The mute gviato de gviato. That comes to exclude the case of more than two rows behind. The inner ones. You don't have to check those. You have to check the top row that faces the ceiling of barrels. And then just the one real row behind it. Tosafot says that they are midayek from Lashon HaMishnah, which is that Beit Hillel says, Hashtei shirot hachitzonot sheina el yonot. So Rav is midayek from the chitzonot. Since the chitzonot is mentioned first, That's what governs over here, chitzonot. And that's why he says you check the first row and the row below it, because those are both chitzonot. That's the most important part of the statement of Beit Hillel. On the other hand, Shmuel believes they're the shtei chitzonot, shehein elyonot. The elyonot comes to modify the chitzonot. And it tells you which are considered to be the chitzonot. Those are those that are the elyonot. And so that's how they get to their different opinions. Rabbi Chiya Tani Kavete de Rav. Rabbi Chiya in the Braita sounds like Rav's understanding. Vikulu Tanai Tani Kavete de Shmuel. And the remainder of the Tanaim seem to indicate that understanding of Beit Hillel's position is like Layat of Shmuel. Then we have an argument of a Hilchata Kavete de Shmuel, which is not clear that Girsa belongs here. But our Gemara does have that. V'hilchot kavati d'shmuel, as the Masorat Hashas points out over here, there are many poskim that paskin like Rav over here. And if you paskin like Rav over here, it's very hard to do that if the Gemara says v'hilchot kavati d'shmuel. So based on that, he believes, and the Tosfot Yom Tov brings this, that they did not have a girsa in their Gemara of v'hilchot kavati d'shmuel. And since they didn't have that girsa, they ended up paskin like Rav. You do have the girsa of v'hilchot kavati d'shmuel, that seems to be normative, that you would have to paskin like Shmuel and not like Rav. Okay, we'll stop over here.